Here we are, shouting at the microphone, throwing all the levels off, and coming to you right out of the basement. This is our second show without our flagship station, WRKO. And I shouldn't say flagship. I don't own the iHeartMedia group, which has taken over it. But we're doing pretty well on the podcast. I think that we have taken it to the next level. We invested a little bit in equipment. We got some professionals on the air, and by professionals, I mean Matt McLaughlin,
yes,
who actually has been paid for acting at one point in time or another.
Yes.
And
several times.
Well, and you just came from a commercial, right?
Yeah, I shot a commercial yesterday.
That's outstanding. So, working actor Matt McLaughlin, working engineer Ken Van Tassel.
And out-of-work actor.
out-of-work actor Ken Van Tassel.
Well, today I'm actually out-of-work actor. So.
That's the life of being an actor. And for
I'm just
me,
a bad actor.
Nice. That's the problem with politics today is all the bad actors. So, and me, your host, Dan Fishman. This is Liberty on the Air. We're here to talk about liberty issues. We're here to have your feedback. And we're here to open up a conversation. The conversation is important because if you're just listening to me, you're going to get a bad view of what liberty is because liberty is different for each person. And our understanding of what liberty is varies from person to person. We've seen huge blow-ups and talks about that over the course of the day, over the course of this last week. One of the biggest ones is the president. And he had a conversation. He was upset about the immigration bill and the way it did not go along with what he wanted. The president wanted, we know he really wants a wall, right? He thinks that's what we're going to work out with.
A beautiful wall.
A beautiful wall, a big wall, a wall that keeps out.
The wall that was supported by many, many of the Democrats not too long ago?
I'm not even aware of that story. Were they?
I believe that many of them were ready to vote for it, I think, during the Obama years in another immigration deal. Of course, that deal probably, was much more lenient and they maybe weren't really for it, but they did say they were going to vote for it.
It is interesting that, a large part of the wall actually was built during the Obama administration, or a large part of a wall. I think 700 miles has been built so far. But in some conversation, a conversation with a mixed group of senators, and by mixed, I mean Republicans and Democrats, the president said something, and there's a little confusion about what he said, but I think a lot of people are saying that it's generally true that he used the phrase shithole countries. And it's exciting because we're not on the radio, so we don't have to worry about FCC regulations. However, a lot of news organizations have used the phrase shithole. NPR did it. CNN did it.
You don't have to worry about Facebook zucking your stream.
Yeah, I don't I don't think that they'll care about shithole. But that leads us to the first liberty conversation. What organization should be so powerful that they can prevent you from reporting the news because there's an obscenity in it? Obscenity laws on the air are ridiculous.
Well, my understanding is the FCC doesn't ban any words from being on the air.
Right.
There's no list of seven words or nine words, whatever George Carlin was talking about.
Right.
Basically, the FCC is a policing organization, and since they own the public airwaves, since they lease them out to places for the public good, what basically happens is if something is said on the air, if someone or an act is said, if someone says, any of those seven words that George Carlin had, someone has to complain. And then those complaints get
viewed.
Well, they get viewed and then they can levy a fine. Like,
right.
Nothing would have happened with the Super Bowl. CBS wouldn't have been fined had right. No one complained.
We're talking about the famous wardrobe malfunction where Timberlake exposed Janet Jackson's
terrible halftime show until that
breast,
moment.
Yeah, breast, her breast with a nipple ring around it.
Justin Timberlake, by the way, who is making his return
to
Super Bowl halftime shows.
Interesting. I didn't
on February 4th. Yeah.
The other interesting thing is with that is, with the FCC, there was a live broadcast, I don't know, it might have been 10 years ago now. I think it was a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction or something of that ilk. And Bono of U2 said fucking. He was like, this guy's the fucking best or something like that. There were complaints. The FCC levied no fines. No, because they were like, oh, it was a live broadcast. He wasn't saying it in an obscene way or whatever. It's not as sort of cut and dry. What happens is each network,
right.
CBS, ABC, NBC, any of the broadcast networks that are over there have their own standards and practices divisions. And they say, and then to avoid that stuff, they say you can't do this. You can't say these words. Like that's.
It's interesting because there was, you know, there's a couple of famous instances. Obviously, Howard Stern, I believe, is more fined than anybody else in the history of the FCC. Just enormous fines. And so he had a game, for those of you who remember the match game. Essentially, he has a sentence. And then
it's back, by the way.
Yeah, the match game is back, hosted by the modern-day Gene Rayburn, Alec Baldwin.
Even-tempered man, Alec Baldwin.
Yes, exactly right. And so they have a sentence, and they ask people to fill in what's in the sentence. And so the first sentence he has is that he says, you know, my favorite nickname for Richard is blank. And then everybody figures out what they want to write down. And then the second one was, you know, I was standing by the riverbank looking at the blank willows, which incidentally is where the name of my fantasy football team came from. However, they went on. Robin Quivers responded. She was being one of the guests, and she said, well, I wrote down pussy, but it's my handwriting's not very neat, so I've got a sloppy pussy. And somebody else, oh, I wrote down pussy, but I spilled water on it. And so, I mean, you can see where the joke is going at this point in time. And so they were playing games with sort of the FCC regulations, pointing out how ridiculous it is. And then I think taking it to the next level, if you've ever watched Jimmy Kimmel's This Week in Unnecessary Censorship.
Oh, that's hysterical.
They block out certain words. And so, you know, somebody could say, well, they were there fighting for 2 hours. And Jimmy Kimmel will take the clip and say, they were there fighting for 2 hours. And they point out that by actually censoring it, you call more attention to it. Makes it a bigger deal.
See, Dan, is your point that any network should be able to say or show anything?
I do. I do think that that would be okay. I mean, I think that, you know, people have a right to expect reasonable programming from their channel. However, reasonable programming is based on your expectations of what they've done beforehand. And if they do something that you are offended by, don't watch anymore. That's the beauty of, I mean, I don't know how many broadcast channels.
You'd be fine if ABC was replaced by Pornhub.
Well, I do see a day.
It'd be Porn BC. Let's be serious. All right.
I think I do see a day in which there will be a broadcast porn station. I mean, porn is so huge.
But I'm not talking about cable or whatever. Broadcast. I'm talking about broadcast, like
over the airways. Yeah, absolutely.
That the FCC controls.
Yeah, I mean, it seems likely to me. I mean, the way porn is so good at monetizing what they do, it wouldn't surprise
sort
me.
Of.
Well, I doubt they would try because they're not doing money in broadcast TV anymore, right? Yeah. The internet has taken that over.
Yeah. Well, I think what they would do though is they would have it so that you have to have a descrambler. I mean, they kind of like DirecTV, right? DirecTV is
but
all
wouldn't
broadcast.
Wouldn't that be censorship though, Dan?
Which?
Having a descrambler?
Well, no, the company does it because that's how they would get paid. Like, I mean, DirecTV specifically scrambles signal.
Like right now you can get CBS over the air without paying anything.
Right.
So broadcast television is...
Right, but it doesn't pay. Well, I mean,
CBS, they sell advertising, I guess.
Right, exactly.
It's an advertising-based model.
Right. I mean,
so
I think...
if the advertisers didn't like it, they wouldn't sell any... They wouldn't buy...
Pornhub also has advertisers. But, I understand.
Right. if there were...
you've been told.
Right. If there were advertising on pornography, you know, in order to enable a broadcast television station, I mean... I don't know. I mean, there is, technically speaking, right, on DirecTV,
on Dish
Network.
Fox is hurting. Maybe they'll change their model. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there definitely has been soft porn on television already, right? I mean, one of the famous FCC cases was Sipowicz's buttocks. However, there's also, I mean, if you watch a soap opera.
That was, you consider a guy's butt in a shower softcore porn?
I mean, it's naked body parts that nobody wants to see. So, yes, that's what I would say. On the other
hand, that would be an obscene something that the FCC needs to stop.
Right.
But the point is, the FCC can, it's not that they ban certain words or phrases at all. It's an obscenity law. You could say none of those words and not have anyone be shown nude, and it could,
and somebody could still complain?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're describing like a sex act or something like
that. Yeah. And I also think, Dan, one of your other questions was when reporting the news. I think when someone is reporting something, if it is instrumental to the show or the story, not the show,
right?
Then people will, and then people complain about it. The FCC might turn around and say, no, this is an acceptable use of that. I you know, I'm trying to figure out what your main sort of issue is. It's like you want no policing at all over the airwaves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's necessary. I mean, either in broadcast radio, broadcast television, any of that stuff. Just because something's on the air doesn't mean that it's particularly accessible. You have to tune it in. Now, the fact that it's a channel that, you know, if it's, let's say, back in the day, you know, remember UHF, Channel 38,
yep,
broadcast the Red Sox game, a lot of other games in the Massachusetts area. Excuse me. When those things happen, you know, they're broadcasting whatever they're broadcasting. Spanish language channels are dominating right now. And honestly, I bet you, well, if you say that it's a complaint-based system, I doubt that the FCC has the ability to regulate foreign language broadcasts unless somebody complains. But do they just regulate obscenity? Do they regulate violence? You know, if we were talking about George Carlin and his seven words you can't say on television, George Carlin famously says, you know, I've heard two people say that I'd rather watch my children watch a video of people making love than people trying to kill each other. And then he goes on to, I'm going to butcher George Carlin's routine, to say, I'd like to take it a step further. I'd like to take all the old movies where they say kill and replace it with the word fuck. So we're going to fuck you now, Sheriff, but we're going to fuck you slow. So, I mean, it's an interesting question, because if they're regulating obscenity, why aren't they regulating violence?
They could be. I actually don't know.
Yeah, I think they actually might.
So what happened? So if it's something you have to tune into, what if it was happening in a public area, but it wasn't a place? I mean, you could walk around it. You could walk a block out of your way to not see right. or hear it.
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, do we have obscenity laws in public? We do, right? We don't allow people to walk around naked.
Do you think there's any sort of decency standard in general?
I think that there can be a reasonable decency standard that people say, I don't want to have to be confronted with this in public. But I don't believe that tuning into a radio station or tuning into a television station is public. And my standard of what you don't have to be confronted with in public is pretty high. I mean, you weigh that against what is a freedom of speech.
Yeah, I mean, over-the-air broadcast is considered a public performance, though.
Yeah. Because
it's a commons
Because
space.
Anybody can tune into it?
Yes.
But, I mean, they have to dial in. They have to participate in it that way. Right, it's not like they.
But it's a because it's a public outlet. The air.
Yeah, you have to tune
not,
in. But if you don't know, if you're just flipping through the channels, and all of a sudden you run across.
The,
you know,
the point
something.
Is that the frequency spectrum is a natural phenomenon. It's not something that you subscribe to.
Right.
It is something that is not owned by anybody.
Right.
You could argue that the FCC claims ownership in some way, but that's why it's classified.
Yeah, they own the rights to the
kind to of administrate.
Well,
right.
No, they you know. It happens with, you know, wireless mics are changing. The FCC is taking the 600 megahertz broadcast band, I believe. So people with wireless microphones like lavalier mics used for productions or films or movies or what have you. They're going to run into a couple of problems in a couple of years.
Interesting.
Over on certain bandwidths because they're sort of, I mean, because they own them. Like they, I mean, because they regulate them for use in communication,
right?
Well, not just in television, but radio communication.
We talked about this
Wi-Fi and stuff like that.
We talked about this legitimately. That there is, without the FCC regulating those things, to a certain extent, there are no high-powered radio stations, right? If the FCC doesn't say only WRKO can broadcast on AM 680 in this area, there's going to be an AM 680 station in Lowell that's going to come on 1 hour a day and overpower the system coming out of Boston, the signal coming out of Boston. They're actually taking advantage of the fact that RKO has programming on 680 the rest of the day. At least that's my understanding of how radio works. I could be wrong. Is that fundamentally?
I'm not. What are you saying?
I'm saying that if I had a powerful enough station in Lowell, I could broadcast on AM 680 and people would receive my state signal instead of the WRKO signal.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. I mean, that's what pirate radio is.
Yeah,
right.
Interfere with
set up
it too.
A transmitter.
Right, and so essentially, the nice thing about it is, I get, if I'm only doing 1 hour a day, I get the credit for the rest of WRKO's broadcast. I go on and off
you
the air
may
for
not
an hour.
Be, may not be actually heard. It might be interference. So you're saying that the FCC shouldn't exist and that they shouldn't regulate those
wristbands? No, I'm actually saying that there is a call. There is a reason for them. The regulation of the naturally occurring frequencies.
But isn't that censorship, letting one person own a frequency in an area?
Well, they buy, they pay for it.
It's a commons problem.
Yeah, it is. It's a tragedy of the commons. It's a classic thing about it. And so how do you regulate resources? The best way to regulate resources, in my opinion.
Lots and lots of laws.
Well, is a free market. So let people bid on the spectrum, and that's what happens right now.
Yeah, but the problem is that you have to, at some point, say that someone has an authority to sell off spectrum, right?
Right. And to a certain extent.
That is the philosophical debate issue.
Right. And there's a big question about that. It's a pretty big circle to get to, you know, considering that we started talking about Trump and obscenity laws.
Something about walls.
Right, walls.
Well, I think the wall thing is great because, you know, putting a wall around Haiti, that seems cost effective, right?
Well, so that's an interesting thing. A lot of people wouldn't have to.
I mean, obviously.
Put a wall in the entire
Maybe
ocean.
We could dig a moat around Haiti. Oh, wait. It's an island.
A new one.
But
better one.
One of the interesting things about it, and one of the things that people are complaining about, is they say it's not so much that the president said shithole on the air.
Was it on the air?
Oh, no, sorry, I didn't say it on the air. That he said shithole in a meeting.
I mean, nobody knows for sure. And what kind of?
Where was this sort of like a?
Essentially,
not defending his comments.
No, that's fine.
It's not a presidential thing to say, but it's very different if he's on the floor of the Senate or in
No, this was
or if he's in just some sort of like in the hallways having some sort of
it was a formal meeting. With Republican and Democratic senators.
That's what I thought. But
talking about the immigration bill.
Discussing legislation.
Right. And the essence of what he said was close to, we don't want to have people coming in from shithole countries. Now, nobody's sure of the exact quote. People seem to be pretty confident about that word being used. And generally, they say that it was being used to talk about African immigration. However, a specific quote that everybody agrees on is that the president said, we want immigrants from Norway. We don't want immigrants from Haiti, which some people have seen to be saying, we want white immigrants. We don't want black immigrants. Now, is that entirely fair to say? I mean, Norway is
a
modern country.
The only difference between Norway and Haiti is just the color of the people's skins. Beyond that, everything's exactly the same, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, same. Same work, same job opportunity.
Same GDP.
Socialism. There's no question about it. You're right. There are a lot of different things that are different about them. And so...
We're parsing, obviously, but I think the main point of that is like, hey, you know...
Right. On the other hand, the idea that those things are intrinsic to the people as opposed to intrinsic to the country...
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting.
Is very different because, you know, there are many famous Haitian immigrants. I believe Wyclef Jean is from Haiti.
Who raised a bunch of money after the earthquake and then kept it?
I was not aware of the fact that he kept the money. But
I don't want to slander my... I believe there was some controversy over what happened to the money that was raised for that.
Yeah.
I don't think much of it went to where it was supposed to go.
I do know one little thing about it, and I don't know if this is Wyclef Jean, but there is, you know, obviously the probably the most famous Haitian of all, right, is Duvalier, Baby Doc, the dictator of Haiti. And I believe that there were some people who were concerned that money they were going to send there was going to go to the evil dictatorship or whatever it was. I'm not excusing what happened with Wyclef Jean, and I don't know.
But that's also a valid fear. Yeah, I don't know everything about that. I remember seeing some stuff about people were complaining about him.
Right. The point is that we know Haitians are not intrinsically worth less than Norwegians.
Oh, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
It's the same, like, for years, why immigration law has been really focused around H-1B visas and skilled immigrants, right? This is the thing, though, is should immigration be related to the perceived productivity of certain countries' people? Or should immigration be just another free market exchange?
Well, I think that if you are having a situation where people are coming here as refugees, right, as Haitians were.
Right, but no, I'm just talking about just regular immigration practices.
Yeah.
With no emergency status or anything. why is it, do you think it's a valid practice to say, we have more room for skilled immigrants than unskilled immigrants? Because that is the practice today.
Right, I don't. I think that it's okay to hire people to work in your country and get issue work visas, right? If you need to hire somebody to work here, that's great. That's what we want. We want the United States to be so wealthy that we have the money to hire people to come in, which is, you know, obviously going to be more expensive than paying somebody locally, or at least in most cases, maybe not in agricultural. But in those situations, I want immigration to be available to everybody, because people are coming here and they're still coming here in spite of all our flaws, everything that we've done wrong, and, you know, we've done a million things wrong, but we've done a million more things right. We are still the place where if you believe in yourself, come to America, come to the United States, because you're going to be able to make something out of yourself.
Or go to nowhere. Apparently they're very good.
Well, I mean, yeah, I would say that there's no way I'm going to Norway. It's cold, all those other things. But in the United States, people come. But you're right. People do. I wonder, I mean, obviously England gets a lot of immigrants coming in from Commonwealth countries. France gets immigrants coming in from their former colonies. But I don't know of anybody who has a natural path, at least as large as we do, of immigrants coming in. Because that's our history, right? I mean, we've always been immigrants. And so when the president differentiates between countries in terms of where we want immigrants from, I think that that is a classification that fundamentally we feel is wrong. You know, I mean, even when we talk about, you know, people from countries that have active terrorist cells, right? Because the president has banned visas from the seven dangerous countries of Iran, Iraq, Yemen, I don't know where else, but not from the country where the 20 hijackers of the 9/11 country came from. This idea that your country of origin can be used to determine your worth as a person, I don't buy that. And I think that that's a mistake for us to get into. All that being said, when we talk about the president making a distinction between people and whether color or not was a distinction, it leads us into our upcoming holiday, which is Martin Luther King Day, coming up tomorrow. Martin Luther King Day, you know, until very recently, was not honored in all of the states. I believe Arizona was the first to officially adopt it. But as recently as 2 years ago, I know this because I'm in the education field, many Texas schools did not honor Martin Luther King Day. But they've come around. They've done it. And so Martin Luther King, you know, had a dramatic impact on our history.
Isn't it a federal holiday?
It is a federal holiday, but, you know, states are not required. States can do their own thing, right? They don't have to do anything about federal holidays. And in many cases, some of the states didn't. Arizona, it ended up being a big deal because the NFL said, look, we're not going to give you a Super Bowl so long as you're not honoring the federal holiday of Martin Luther King Day. And I believe, I'm trying to remember if the team was based, if the Cardinals had moved there already. But there's a lot of social pressure around it. North Carolina, right, had a, it wasn't African-American, it wasn't a holiday, but they had a recent discriminatory law that had passed, and they lost a lot of social pressure. But for Martin Luther King, when we talk about it, you know, there's one big speech that I always remember that Dr. King gave. Sort of his, it was the speech he gave the night before he was killed. And so he's sort of prophetic in talking about some of the things that are going to happen. And so let's listen to that speech.
We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
So that's the Martin Luther King Day speech. He gave it right before the next day. You know, and it sounds like he was almost prophetic at that point in time. I'm not fearing any man. Like anybody, I would like to have a long life. And then the next day, you know, he's assassinated by James Ray. And it's an interesting thing because the battle for liberty in the United States, and we can have an interesting conversation, I think, about what Martin Luther King represented. And then we can go into sort of the Civil Rights Act and some of the pieces of it that many libertarians object to, and then talk about where that's brought. But this struggle for liberty has always been birthed in violence. American Revolution, you know, the British, when they rebelled against the monarchy the first time, the British Revolution, Civil War. And, you know, here when African-Americans, and, you know, to quote Dr. King again, when they sat down in lunch counters, they were really standing up for what was right in the American dream. And we are back. Liberty on the air. In this case, liberty in the basement, which, you know, it's about as good as you could hope for. Party on Wayne.
Party on Garth.
All right. A little Wyclef Jean, absolutely. A famous Haitian from what the president would have called a shithole country. But we're back. And we want to talk about Dr. King, Martin Luther King Day, and the idea that, you know, one of the most controversial ideas of civil rights movement is the Civil Rights Act, which has in it one particular phrase, one particular section. I believe it's Article 9, where essentially it says that if you are a public accommodation, you have to serve the public. And the best example of that is the sit-ins at the lunch counters, specifically at Woolworth's, some other places. And to go through the whole history of that, it's unfair to say that most businesses were discriminating, because what had happened was in the South, there had been laws passed that required segregation, that required businesses to have a white and black section and to not allow the people to mix. So the fact that these laws passed, that's pretty terrible. And you can't blame...
I believe that was allowed from a... is Mike actually on?
It is.
came from a Supreme Court case that actually allowed separate...
Hello, is this thing on?
Is this on? I think it was Plessy versus Ferguson, which allowed separate but equal. I think it talked about train cars and stuff. I believe, you know... So you could have a train car for white people and a train car for black people, but as long as they had the same amenities, that was considered constitutional. I believe that was the late 1800s. And I think
right.
That, I mean we've obviously overturned Plessy versus... I believe we've overturned Plessy versus...
It has been overturned. I'm
Brown
not,
versus Board of Education, I believe.
Brown versus Board of Education is slightly different. But yes, Plessy versus Ferguson establishes... separate but equal. So what's interesting about it, though, is that then the states had laws, because in Massachusetts, right, we didn't have separate counters, or at least certainly in the 50s, there were not separate black and white counters in the dining room. We didn't have white and colored water fountains in schools. So it was the state's interpretation, whereas it was my understanding is that Georgia, Alabama, those states required those things. They required African Americans to sit in the back of the bus. Rosa Parks, you know, famously accepting that. But it's an interesting thing, because if you take all that aside and you take the take the state's laws requiring it out of that, would you still have discrimination?
What do you mean?
Would we still have a problem with some people saying, no blacks allowed in my business?
I'm going to guess yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I would assume that the people who passed the law saying, I'm assuming many of the people in an area where law was passed saying, black people have to use this water fountain, they have to sit at this lunch counter, probably wouldn't be.
Right. Although at the time that those laws are passed, those legislators are elected via white-dominated governments. There's a tremendous amount of done to suppress the black vote. I'm going to get this wrong now, but Earl Warren, the Warren Court, when he resigned, when he retired, he'd been chief justice for several critical decisions, including Brown versus the Board of Education. But they asked him what was the most famous case that he had decided. And he decided that the most famous case was one of, I can't remember the name of the case right now, but we'll find it in a second, in which in Tennessee, the legislature had resisted redistricting. And so in all the time that Tennessee had been growing, they had kept the lines drawn for representation in the House the same. So Nashville, which had grown and grown and grown, including a large African-American population, still only had one representative in the state house. And the rural farmlands had 18. So this case where, and it was very ardently fought, Felix Frankfurter on one side saying that the government had no right to get involved, and on the other side,
That makes zero sense. The government has no right to get involved into something that has to do with the government.
Well, so that essentially it's a breach of the separation of powers, that the judicial should not, because you can make an argument that that is activist behavior by the judges, because the law, the legislature, is in charge of how they draw up the district lines.
Make the
lines.
Argument that every Supreme Court is an activist.
Well,
I know what you mean by activist, but I mean,
it'd be where in the Constitution are state legislatures prohibited from gerrymandering districts in such a way?
Right, exactly.
That segues in because the Supreme Court is ready to hear a second. They have multiple cases on gerrymandering in their docket.
Right.
That they're looking to hear relatively soon.
Interesting. And do we think? Is there any thought about what's going to happen? What are the big cases? Anything that we know about? We'll look those up and get a little
more
detail.
Yeah, I was reading some of that. But this case is, I'd never heard about this Tennessee case. And that sounds, your summation of it is fascinating
and short
and laughable. If they're like, if the whole point of representative government and representative districts is to base the number of representatives on the population. So if I understand you correctly, if they're basically saying that this place gets one, and I'm assuming the reason, or at least the perceived reason, was because it was a large African-American community and they didn't want them to have a larger voice in the government, that just seems terrible and racist. And
right.
But it's laughable in the face that the whole point of representatives.
So the name of the, you're exactly right. The whole point of representatives is to represent the people equally. The name of the case is called Baker versus Carr. And I'm going to put into the live stream a link to it. Ideally, people wouldn't join it right now because they should be listening to our show.
But if you want to know about the cases that are being heard now.
Yeah.
So the Supreme Court added another case about gerrymandering to their docket. This one is a challenge from Maryland Republicans who say that the state's dominant Democrats drew a congressional district that violated their rights. And the court already has a case pending from Wisconsin Democrats challenging the opposite direction. But the interesting thing is that people are saying that Justice Kennedy is going to be kind of the deciding vote here.
Interesting.
And because he has vocally expressed his belief before that partisan gerrymandering could theoretically be viewed as retaliation against voters for their past support of the party's candidate, thus potentially being a violation of the First Amendment.
Well, so that leads, I mean, that's a quick aside as to whether or not voting is a First Amendment right, which I have argued that it is, but many people will dispute that it is not. I believe that voting is the ultimate in political speech.
What is the argument, briefly?
Yes.
So we don't get sidelined too long. What is the argument that it isn't a right or free speech?
So there's nothing.
Or protective, I mean.
There's essentially nothing about it that says that you have a right to vote.
In the Constitution?
Yeah. And so that being established, you know, how people are counted, representatives, stuff like that. There's some talk about that, famously, the Three-Fifths Compromise, that there would be a representational democracy. But your right to vote is not necessarily, it's not, as far as I know.
It's not codified, but
yeah.
I mean,
heavily hinted at in the Constitution.
Yeah. The Ninth Amendment exists for a reason.
Right.
And I understand it's kind of, Ninth Amendment is sometimes used as a crutch for people to want to include whatever they feel like as being a right.
Just to be clear, the Ninth Amendment says that all the rights that are not enumerated in the Constitution belong to the states or the people.
Right. It's essentially, in layman's terms, make no mistake about it, just because it's not listed here does not mean that you may not have rights outside of what's listed here.
Right, exactly. And so that's where the idea that, so it doesn't specifically say that voting is protected. However, we have come to understand citizens have the right to vote. There are some controversies about what you can do to lose the right to vote. Some people argue that in some states, felons can't vote. In some state, felons can't vote while they're in prison, but once they get out, they're deemed to have served their time, and then they can vote again. That's all controversial. So, and that's an example of how you know it's not a constitutional right. Because if it were a constitutional right, it wouldn't vary from state to state. I suppose I could say that about the Second Amendment, too. But yeah. I knew you were going to go there, Ken. That being said, this case, the redistricting case in Tennessee, and the ones that are coming up now, sort of represent the fact that when gerrymandering happens, when Massachusetts, a great example, too, if you were doing it right, Massachusetts...
That's where it started, right?
Yep, exactly right. In fact, this district where we're the undisclosed location where we're broadcasting from was the district that was specifically drawn to make sure that Republicans were going to win.
You're giving away our bunker's location.
Well...
And if I get a ballistic missile warning, I'm leaving.
We're going into the ballistic missile in a second.
And wasn't Barney Frank's district like from Newton to New Bedford or something?
Oh, if you look at the Massachusetts map now, it is... It's embarrassing. I mean, it is honestly embarrassing for Massachusetts, which is supposed to be, you know, the birthplace of American liberty. Our congressional districts are...
It's on the license plate, Spirit of America, meaning the spirit of corruption and nonsense political
action. Which makes me just want to play the old clip from the Dukakis years, the Spirit of America song.
Oh, I don't even know this.
Oh, you've never heard this?
This was from his gubernatorial campaign?
No, well, I don't think... It was promoting Massachusetts in general for tourism.
No, I didn't hear it.
The video is amazing. The song, I'm pretty sure Dukakis. I don't think Dukakis came up with it.
Right, but it's during his administration.
Yes, it was talking about how the spirit of Massachusetts is the spirit of America.
Interesting.
It's a wonderful song. I believe Ken is looking for it now. So maybe
unfortunately, you type that in, and the top results are Family Guy versions of it.
Yes, Family Guy did do a version of it.
Is it a short song?
Yeah, it was for a commercial.
There's a commercial that's 30 seconds.
There.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that'll be it.
Okay. All right, so here we go. Spirit of Massachusetts. We're going to hear it right now.
It's the corner of America with cozy harbor towns. It's salty air, wicker chairs, and a surf that pounds.
Wicker chairs.
The spirit of Massachusetts is the spirit of America. The spirit of the red, white, and blue.
Matt knows all the words.
Watch a lot of TV in the 80s.
For your free Massachusetts vacation kit, call 1-800-64-MASS.
So,
and I can't figure out why Dukakis didn't win that election.
but what's interesting about it, first of all, if you saw it, they were probably advertising to the wrong people because you lived in Massachusetts at the time.
I mean, I definitely
like patting
saw it,
yourself on the back.
Yeah. But I mean, like here, I've definitely seen commercials for like for California, like they have a series.
Oh, sure. You see Florida commercials.
Florida
all the time.
Or, you know, Myrtle. Like, you know, there are definitely places that do sort of.
South Carolina, right. Yeah. Myrtle Beach.
But anyway, back to
gerrymandering. That's the Family Guy version of it. This might be better.
The spirit of Massachusetts is the spirit of America, the spirit of the red, white, and blue.
Good enough.
The spirit of Massachusetts is the spirit of America.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think that's the point, is that
Well, the spirit of Massachusetts is
so
once we started gerrymandering,
exactly,
everybody should.
Right. Well, but so if you look at the map, and I do encourage people, I mean, you know, we have there's a great candidate, libertarian candidate running right here in the 6th district, Sam Rachapi, for Congress. People should find out more about him. But if you look at the map of the 6th district, it's at least a little bit sane. If you look at the 7th district, what used to be Barney Frank's district, what is now Joe Kennedy Jr., Joe Kennedy III's district, that's ridiculous.
And I'm pretty sure it is. It is Newton and New Bedford.
Yeah, it's like this little sliver of a line that they drew.
Oh, wait,
so that
a minute.
They didn't
No. No, it makes sense, because Newton and New Bedford, N-E-W. So it's alphabetical, right, by area? That's how we're doing representation now?
Sadly not, because it's actually about how do you draw things, how do you draw the district so that people can't win. Now, there's a great example of crazy gerrymandering at the state representative level, Chelmsford. And actually, we have an expert on the issue.
Yeah, I mean, interesting about Chelmsford, they have, depending on what part of the town you live in, you have one of four different state representatives.
What?
So if you live in the northern part, you have the one that's shared with Lowell. If you live in the southern part, you have the one shared with the state representative for Concord Carlisle. If you live in the eastern half, one of them is shared with Westford and things like so.
Right, and the prior
reason for this was because the district that included Chelmsford was a predominantly Republican district.
Solid Republican vote up until
consistently reelected. I forgot her name, but she was a longtime Republican state rep in Chelmsford, and she was getting older, and they decided to gerrymander, essentially, Chelmsford, carve it up in a way that would...
And what's interesting is that this is also relevant because this election cycle elects the Secretary of State who will be responsible for gerrymandering, the future thing, because in 2020, we will be redrawing the districts again. So there's a push to find... In fact, I heard this today. Galvin is going to be primary. There's a Democrat running against William Galvin for Secretary of State, which is amazing. And you know why? Because there's huge power involved in redrawing the districts.
Right.
No Republican's going
to
win.
I just wanted to point out real quick, George Carpenter on Facebook, longtime listener, he pointed out the fact that you kind of have to extrapolate the right to vote pre-existing the 1870 ratification of the 15th Amendment.
Ooh, well, that's an outstanding point. The 15th Amendment does specifically mention voting.
Yes, the right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. That, of course, not being ratified until 1870.
Right, and then, as he follows up, the 19th Amendment also specifically mentions voting. So there actually is within the amendment protections to voting. So I take it back. It's not protected under the First Amendment, though.
Right, it's not protected within the Bill of Rights, which
is... Voting is not speech, according to the U.S. Constitution. However, I would argue that voting is speech. It's the ultimate in political speech. So if we agree then that you do have rights to vote, the question is how much does the state have to tolerate that? And in fact, it says specifically the right to vote in the 15th Amendment should not be denied or abridged by the United States on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So slaves essentially were given complete right to vote. However,
you can see why that might have had trouble being ratified for 100 years.
Well, it was written and ratified essentially without the South being able to vote.
Right.
Because the South is in occupation after the Civil War, and so they're not allowed to object to constitutional amendments. Which, that's a fascinating thing. They did they reached the end of their era, and that was the beginning of sort of changing things around. So they instituted Jim Crow laws, all these other things to help the whites retain political power in the South. And I don't think it's controversial to say that, right? If we look back at Jim Crow and the laws that are in the South, it's clear that that's what they were trying to do. They wanted to retain political power as long as they could.
I think that's sort of a generic thing that happens throughout history. That's the sort of the haves and the have-nots, that those that have power want to keep it, and then we'll find or stumble upon something that's different about the have-nots, and then use that as a major terrible difference between them. You know, I think Swift talked about it as the way people open their eggs, from which end, and how crazy the other people were.
Yeah, Big Endian, Little Endian. Frederick Douglass has a wonderful quote about this. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. And that's the core of what happened, is that these people who had this lifestyle in which they were, you know, a class above, were not willing to yield it until it was demanded that they be yield. And that's what Martin Luther King represents, at least to me. It's this idea that people had finally said, we can change things. We can recognize the fact that separate but equal is not equal, that we can say that we ought to be able to live in the front of the, we ought to be able to go to the front of the queue. We ought to be able to go to a restaurant that we want to. We ought to be able to sit down at the same table with our white brothers and sisters. And that's what Martin Luther King's dream was about. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about liberty. Liberty for you, for me, for everybody. Thanks so much for tuning into Liberty on the Air. Look forward to hearing from you guys again next week.
Skippy, I hope you found us.